Call my wife.
Calling UK Wildlife.
Voice assistance not working for you? BlackRock Investment Trust has a lot working for you. Get to know them at blackrock.com. Capital at risk. Marketing material. BlackRock Investment Management UK Limited. Authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority.
Hello, here on another of the Baseball America Prospect Profiles. Today, we are talking about Braves number one prospect, left-hander Cam Caminiti. I'm going to answer your question before you ask it. He is a cousin of Ken Caminiti, the Astros and Braves, veteran third baseman. Carlos, when you think about Cam Caminiti, the Braves have been producing pitching prospect after pitching prospect after pitching prospect. They have a top 10 loaded with pitching prospects. But among the high school arms that they have drafted recently, it does feel like that Caminiti kind of has a little bit higher ceiling than some of the others.
Yeah, Caminiti was the top-ranked high school pitcher in his draft class coming out of 2024. The Braves have been one of the more aggressive teams in the industry in just targeting pitching at the top of their drafts in recent years. They're also one of the teams that just doesn't seem afraid of high school pitchers in particular. Caminiti is one of the best of that demographic that the team has acquired in a number of years, and he ranks as their top overall prospect because of that. I think the ability for Cam Caminiti to profile as a potential top of the rotation arm is maybe the separator for him. There is a unique amount of power and polish in this left-handed delivery here. He throws from an uncomfortable low slot. When I was talking to scouts before the draft, before he was taken in the first round, I was getting a lot of future 70 evaluations on his fastball. It's a mid-90s heater. He gets into the upper 90s consistently. And I think he made some really impressive strides with his secondaries as well in what was a really promising pro debut for him in the 2025 season.
When you talk about, he had a very strong debut, low A Augusta. Say, he's obviously still far away. That's low A. That is several steps away from the major leagues. But the other thing I would say with that is we've always kind of known about the fastball. How are the secondaries? That's going to be kind of the key, because he also throws strikes already. But the key for Caminiti being that potentially front of the rotation arm is really about the development of the breaking ball, the changeup, and kind of how that fits with what's already a very impressive fastball.
Yeah, absolutely. I think prior to the draft, Caminiti's strength in the secondary department was his changeup. He's always had pretty natural feel for that pitch. It looked like a rock-solid weapon for him before he got into pro ball. And the encouraging thing about Caminiti's 2025 season is both his changeup and his low 80s slider were consistent swing and miss pitches for him in the lower minors. Like you said, it's not the most advanced competition in the world, but I do think for anyone who had questions about Cam Caminiti's ability to spin the baseball, which was his biggest question, he took a step forward in addressing that concern in his debut season. It's this low 80s sweeping slider right now that was his go-to secondary pitch. I think the fact that it was his go-to secondary ahead of the changeup is encouraging for anyone who is questioning that pitch. We've got above average grades on both his slider and his changeup right now. I think moving forward, maybe we're going to see Caminiti tweak with the movement or the power of those pitches. There are some thoughts that adding a gyro slider, like a shorter breaking ball that he can throw for strikes even more frequently, will be key. He's worked on a kick changeup as well that flashes splitter-like depth. So I think there's more in the tank for both of these secondaries. And it's just going to be a matter of, are they continuing to miss bats at higher levels as he progresses through the minors? Because he is far away. He's far away. But between the fastball, the slider, the changeup, and the control, which we think is above average or has a chance to be above average, there's a lot to like here.
I do love this. When we talk about high school pitcher power pitchers, right-handed power pitchers, almost always there's a sentence in their write-up that first year in pro ball. It's like, he's working on a changeup, but he's never really used it before. It's a very different story when you talk about a left-handed power pitcher, because that changeup has been something that they've worked on as a weapon when they're facing right-handed hitters all the way coming up. But you also touched on, he's making adjustments, he's working on a kick change, maybe adding a gyro slider. This is not a new development. This is something we see with a lot of pitchers these days. But it also kind of gives a little bit of a hint that hopefully there's some adjustability, there's some ability to kind of add, subtract, mix and match to kind of optimize his arsenal as he climbs the ladder. That's kind of something also that stands out here as is kind of could be key for him. But what are you hearing as far as when you talk to not just Braves officials, but other, evaluators about his ability to kind of take in these adjustments and improve and kind of continue to build?
Yeah, I think it's a great athletic foundation to build on with Caminiti. One of the things that Caminiti brings to the table as well that the Braves have seemingly targeted in the past is his two-way background. He was a pitcher and a hitter in high school. The Braves have had tremendous success with those profiles. I think the athleticism that is inherent with being a two-way player on the baseball field means that maybe you're able to just make adjustments a little bit quicker, or maybe there is a little bit more upside for you to reach once you focus on just one side of the game. I mean, baseball is such a specialized sport, and doing either of these things, hitting or pitching at a high level, just requires so much patience and work and focus. And so I think what was encouraging to me about the season was his ability to, he did miss some time with forearm tendonitis that kind of limited the amount of innings, but when he was on the field, just how good all of his pitches worked at that level and the quality of strikes. If you're looking at areas for him to continue making strides in the future, I think it is probably going to be the command of the secondaries. Because if you look at his fastball miss rate, it was a 70% strike rate with the fastball, which for a left-handed pitcher at his age, at that level in his first days of pro ball, I think is an exceptional number. Typically, you're getting 70% fastball strike rates from sort of pitchability type arms who maybe don't have a lot of power in the tank, but Caminiti is throwing a mid-90s fastball from the left side for strikes at a 70% clip. That was not the same for both the slider and the changeup. So I think moving forward, when he's going to face better hitters who are able to lay off the secondaries with a bit more frequency, his ability to challenge those players in the zone with the secondaries, I think will be interesting to watch.
So we have J.R. Ritchie, another Braves high school pitching prospect, high school draftee pitching prospect, in our top 100 as well. How big of a separation was there in your mind between the two as far as at the top of this list? You know, kind of what kind of put Caminiti a little bit of a notch ahead?
Yeah, I think upside is probably the reason we have Caminiti at the top. I mean, if you really favor proximity and safety, J.R. Ritchie, I think, has a compelling case. They're both top 100 type prospects for us, the only two in the Braves system who made our top 100. But Ritchie is just a very different pitcher from Caminiti. He's got a very diverse arsenal. He throws seven different pitch shapes. He's just coming off a 2025 season where he pitched at AA and AAA. I think there's a chance that he could impact the big league team in 2026. We'll see how their starting rotation shakes up. But what kept me from putting JR in that number one spot was, as opposed to Caminiti, I don't know if you can point to a single pitch that he has right now that is definitely plus. You want to see a little bit more from the fastball. He's shown flashes of a plus slider in the past, but we really didn't see that in 2025. And for him, it's a lot more about mixing and matching and keeping hitters off balance and attacking with good control. I just think Caminiti has another gear that he can get to with his fastball and potentially his secondaries as well. And being left-handed doesn't hurt either.
That is our prospect profile on Braves number one prospect, left-hander Cam Caminiti. For more prospect profiles, check out Baseball America's YouTube channel. We're releasing one of these each day during spring training. And don't miss the next episode of Hot Sheet, Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern. Hey, everybody. J.J. Cooper, Ian Kundle, Jeff Ponce joining you on another of the Baseball America prospect profiles. Today, we are taking a look at Philadelphia Phillies number one prospect, Aiden Miller, who unfortunately has had a little bit of news during spring training, which not the news you want to hear. We know that Miller was held out of the AFL with a, what was at the time termed a minor back issue. That issue is still bothering him. We're not seeing him in games in spring training. We're not seeing him so far. The hope is that this will be a minor setback, but at the same time, Ian, anytime I hear about a baseball player and a back injury, I get a little bit of worried. How worried are you that this is something? We know that Aiden Miller was going to hopefully compete for basically, if not on the opening day roster, a spot in Philly before long. How worried are you about this?
I'd say right now it's moderate. We still got to just under a month until opening day. And Miller's not someone who has a long track record of injuries. He had one in high school, but it was nothing to do with his back. And as a minor leaguer, he's been relatively healthy so far in his career. So I think right now you're hoping, and you take the Phillies' word for it, that it's minor and that you hope that he's back at some point in the next few weeks. But if this is something that, we're getting into mid-March and he still has yet to appear in a game, that's when I think, the concern, you get a little more concerned, because as we've seen in the past with other players, back injuries are something that can linger and into the regular season and can, you know, really impact your ability at the plate and in the field. So you never want to see that for someone like Miller, who is just such an interesting and really talented player.
Jeff, we're here to praise Ayton Miller, though. He's our number one prospect, not to bury him. How worried are you? But more importantly, what is it that makes him our number one prospect in an organization that has a couple of other guys who would have been solid candidates as well?
You know, I think there's other candidates, but I think when you look at the total player, regardless of this concern about the back, and I think we just need to see how that sort of works itself out. It could just be something that flares up from time to time and, you know, not necessarily something that is a long-term persistent issue, or it could be. Backs are very funny. So, you know, it's not something that's an easy fix. That said, I think when we look at the player on the field, he is no question for me the number one prospect in this Philly system. An excellent defender at shortstop. That's only improved with each season as a professional. Even when he was struggling at certain points in the first half of the season with AA Redding, he was still playing great defense, providing really good base running, which is another asset and tool that he's kind of added. You know, in pro ball, it's not something he was necessarily known for as an amateur. And last season was one of, you know, the best stolen base guys in the minors. And then you get to, you know, his profile at the plate. There's good plate skills here. There's always been bat to ball ability. There's always been a good balance of aggression and patience at the plate. And there's always been good underlying EVs. What I think we saw down the stretch over the last month plus out of Miller last year was he made some adjustments to his swing and he really took off and started to get to more of that hard contact more consistently, was pulling the ball in the air more, was just hitting the ball hard in the air more than he ever had in his career. And that carried him to AAA, where he had a lot of success to end the season. And, you know, if it wasn't for this back injury, I think he's a guy that you might be really pushing for a case to maybe break camp with the Phillies, though I don't think we see that happen now. This is a guy that could come up and be a really important piece on a competitive winning team. And I think when you're talking about a team like the Phillies, the Dodgers, the Yankees, et cetera, you need to be a prospect that's capable of handling, you know, stuff, moments in a big spot, providing good defense and clutch hitting. And I think that Miller is going to be able to do all that when fully healthy and on the field for the Phillies.
Ian, the other thing that stands out to me about Ayton Miller is he is an example of player development and how when we are talking about amateurs, you're writing in pencil. You're not writing in pen. The example I would say that's the preeminent example of the 21st century is Nolan Arenado, who came out of high school and there were a lot of questions about whether he would be able to stay at third base. To his credit, he got in better shape. He really worked at it and he became the preeminent defensive third baseman of the National League for a long time. Ayton Miller was a guy who was thought coming out of high school, this guy would probably be a bat who would probably move off the position, and then has gotten a lot better. Like he's really kind of, I feel like, kind of reshaped kind of the evaluation of him as a pro. What kind of like do you take from something like that when you see a guy make the kind of improvements that Ayton Miller has, especially defensively?
I think it just elevates him as the talent he is, that, you know, the guys who could, because not everyone can make that adjustment. There are certain guys who get into pro ball and you move down the defensive spectrum. It's rare that you see guys move up almost in a way, which he basically did, because there's a lot of people thought that he was, as you said, it was going to have to move to the corner. But being able to stay at shortstop shows the athleticism. And I think that it also shows the instincts he has. You know, this is a guy, he really knows how to play baseball. His first step is good. Good range, like everything is taking that step forward. And I just think it shows the certain kind of aptitude that you want to see from your top prospects. And it's just really been impressive following his development as he's gone from someone who, you know, bat first, maybe a corner guy, to now this is a guy who, if you're factoring instincts into his speed, is a five-tool talent.
The other thing that stands out, if Ayton Miller can get healthy, you mentioned the impact he could potentially provide. The other thing I love about this, Jeff, is if you're the Phillies, is he's a shortstop. And so you could say, well, they're kind of set there. They've got Trey Turner. But I would say that what he gives them is depth at every infield position, if healthy, but also the ability to make moves. Like if they need to reorganize a little bit in season, I feel like this is significant what he could provide for them, you know, basically at some point, or kind of provide almost like a trade asset at the trade deadline, not by trading him, but by bringing him up, much like an out-of-house acquisition.
Yeah, I don't think that's wrong at all. He's a guy that can supplement this roster, provide defensive value at, you know, three spots, important spots in the infield, whether it's shortstop, third base, or second base. He's a really strong defender. I think it's also important, just in terms of the Phillies' long-term plans, to keep in mind that, you know, Trey Turner is 33 years old and could, you know, it's funny to say this with Trey Turner, could slow down a little bit. I don't think that's, you know, out of the realm of possibility. Now, the defense has been really good there, and he's probably not someone you're going to move off, but it's a good problem to have. And I think that there's been a lot of questions regarding Alec Baum and that third base position for a few years now, and it could end up being Aiden Miller's job, and also affords the Phillies maybe some opportunities to make some moves at the deadline and be a little bit more flexible, because they know they have a guy like Aiden Miller who can really hold down the fort at, you know, second, third, or shortstop.
He's going to be a very interesting piece. Again, if healthy, we're hoping to see him basically break camp, ready to go. Hopefully this back injury is a minor blip. But if it is, it is something where Aiden Miller, the number one prospect in the Phillies organization, could be a key player to watch in 2026. He is one of our 30 prospect profiles. We're profiling the number one prospect in each and every organization. Check them out at Baseball America's YouTube channel. And by the way, we're organizing them into divisions and rolling them out on our podcast feed as well. Check that out and check out so much more on Baseball America YouTube channel, the podcast feed, and of course, most importantly, at baseballamerica.com. Thank you, Ian. Thank you, Jeff. So long, everybody. We are taking a look at the number one prospect in each and every organization with the Baseball America Prospect Profiles. Today, Jeff Ponce and myself, JJ Cooper, are taking a look at Mets right-hander Nolan McClain, the number one prospect in the Mets organization. And I'm just going to start by saying, if someone's saying, wait a second, Nolan McClain's been in the big leagues. We saw him pitching at the front of the Mets rotation, being a key member of their rotation down the stretch. All of that is true. But the rules are very straightforward when it comes to rookie. Well, I shouldn't say straightforward. The rules are convoluted, but here's what they are. You have to have less than 50 innings, and you have to have less than 45 days of active service time. Nolan McClain had 48 innings. He did not reach those barriers, so he is rookie of the year eligible in 2026. And Jeff, I would say that if you are looking at your NL rookie of the year favorites, you wouldn't want to be mentioning too many players before you mention Nolan McClain's name.
Yeah, I mean, I would argue that he probably is the odds-on favorite at this point to walk away as the NL Rookie of the Year. You know, if you're placing your bets, I think the smart money would probably be on McClain. And I think he's a really interesting name to talk about beyond his ability, beyond all the stuff that we saw, you know, in the big leagues last year. He just barely qualifies. I think it's by just a couple of innings. You know, still a rookie and prospect eligible for us, but it gives us an opportunity to dig into his arsenal. And I think that's what makes McClain so unique. He's a guy that was a two-way player in college, really highly built, you know, a lot of power, struck out a lot, hit a little bit in his first professional season, and then they scrapped it around the midpoint of 2024. Since then, he's really taken off now that he's been, you know, fully committed to pitching. And we've seen the diversity in his arsenal. And I think this is something that, you know, there's trends that happen in the game. A few years ago, it was high ride four seam fastballs and flatter vertical approach angles. And then it was sweepers and cutters. And, you know, then it started to become a lot more sinkers. I think the thing that we saw last season is varied arsenals. Someone who has five or six pitches can attack a variety of hitters different ways depending upon what their strengths and weaknesses and hot zones and cold zones are. And McClain kind of fits that to a T. JJ, he throws six different pitches. And when I say throws, every single one of these six different pitches was thrown 9% or more in game, which is pretty substantial. He's really mixing up that usage. So you look at the sinker and the four seamer, Both move differently. The sinker is a little better than the four seamer, a little bit more traditional, has better traits, but he throws both of them mid to high 90s. There's a lot of velocity here as well. He's got a sweeper, he's got a curveball, he's got a cutter. So three different breaking ball shapes, and then a pretty good changeup as well. And, you know, he's kind of mixing in between that like 96 down to like 80 mile per hour range, with a pitch that kind of fits into each of those velocity bands between that delta. It's a really interesting arsenal, and I think that's what makes McLain so unique and why I'm pretty comfortable, despite him being a pitching prospect still, kind of projecting him to have a great deal of success this year in the major leagues.
I love how you kind of laid that out, because it really is true that this is someone who, if you're a hitter, there's so many things that you have to defend, right? He has pitches that can, whether you are right-handed or left-handed, he has pitches that can run in on you, run away, and he also can basically have that pitch pretty much straight down the middle, which sounds like, okay, is that useful? Well, yeah, it is, because if you can always expect away, 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 or in, you can kind of discard that. He has bridge pitches as well. As you said, he also has the ability to challenge you with top-end velocity, but also really mess with your timing, because he can really slow down your bat as well. And by the way, once he slows it down, then he goes back to that top end velocity, and it feels even tougher to hit because you have had to prepare and have to see something so much slower than, because some guys are, you know, hard with everything they throw. He is every bit the embodiment of what you want to see in a front of the rotation starter. And I would say that this is one of the things that really does stand out with him. The Mets, obviously, they went out and they made a big move with Peralta. They have a pretty deep rotation now. And despite the depth of that rotation, there's really not a question that this is a guy who is fronting this rotation, him and Peralta. This is not, okay, he's a rookie, let's make him the number four or the number five. He's kind of carried a pretty decent workload already. And if you said, well, who do you want to play, you know, pitch in start a game in the playoffs, if the Mets can make it back to the postseason, which they didn't last year, it's Nolan McLain. Like, this is a guy who really does just stand out as someone who has everything you're looking for in a pitcher. Jeff, are there any things here? Are there any hiccups, again, other than he's a pitcher, and so obviously there can be injuries? But is there anything in his game that you're like, okay, this is what he's going to have to probably improve in the long run to, you know, to kind of sustain success?
Yeah, I think, you know, if we're really trying to pick nits here, and it is the finest of combs that we're picking these with. But I think, you know, maybe some of the reliance upon contact. He does miss bats, but it's not crazy whiff rates kind of across the board. A guy that does thrive on driving a really high rate of ground balls. It was 54.7% across 113 innings in the minors last year. In the majors, it was 61.1%. We do know that, you know, ground balls, though they don't leave the park, do have a higher batting average on balls in play than fly balls. So, you know, there might be times where he maybe gets bay-bipped a little bit to death. But overall, I think it's pretty tough, because he did miss bats in the major leagues. He throws a lot of strikes. He really limits hard contact that does a lot of damage, and is going to have a good enough infield, I believe, this year defensively, that getting those ground balls more often than not is going to lead to a high percentage of outs. So it's kind of tough to dig in deep on him and really come up with something that, you know, you can pick apart or say, I don't think he's going to be successful because of this. Maybe you'd like to see him miss a few more bats, but I think that's also one of the reasons he's really efficient and gets very deep into starts.
Right. It is a very well-rounded. This is a reason that he is our number one pitching prospect in the game. I don't think that that was even, to be honest, like Treya Savage also had an exceptional, end of the season, obviously was key in the postseason as well. But if you look at the difference between Nolan McLain and Treya Savage, I do think that you can feel a little bit more comfortable that McLain is going to be able to sustain it and is good, you know, maybe even has a little bit more of a top end. I like how you put it, Jeff. Like, this is a guy who also, because he is efficient, is able to work deeper into games than most young pitchers. Yes, we do love strikeouts. We love missing bats. At the same time, there is something that we also love about a guy who can turn over a lineup to face, let's say, 30, 33, 36, you know, in his best days, batters faced. That's something not a whole lot of guys can do right now. But if you ask what's a delineation between a true ace and a guy who's an excellent number two, that's one of the aspects of it. That's what the Justin Verlanders of the world did for so many years. That's what a Logan Webb does over and over. And by the way, Logan Webb does not miss the same rate of bat to some of these other guys we're talking about, but he does throw 200 innings every year, and there's value to that. When you look at it, I will also say with this, Jeff, like when you look at this Mets rotation, pitching development-wise, they really have kind of taken a nice step here, haven't they?
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, focus on depth of arsenal. They just traded away a guy in Brandon Sproat who has a very diverse arsenal as well. And I think he's a guy like McClain with a college background, which is different than Jonah Tong in terms of their development paths. They really focused, and I think this is something you were hitting on diversified out-generation profiles. Like, they have a lot of different ways to generate outs with a lot of different pitches, and it's a very cerebral approach. It's almost like a plan of approach at the plate for a hitter. It's the same thing with hitters, having a game plan, sticking to it, and knowing when you're in trouble in certain spots, runners on, certain places, whatever it is situationally, you can go to this pitch to try to get this particular type of contact or this particular type of out. And I think that's what the Mets have done as well as anybody.
Nolan McClain is the number one pitching prospect in the game for us right now and the number one prospect in the Mets organization. He's the latest of the Baseball America prospect profiles. If you like to see more of these prospect profiles, check out Baseball America's YouTube channel, because we are rolling out a prospect profile on every organization's number one prospect all through spring training to get you ready for each and every team. And if you enjoy this also, please do check out the Baseball America YouTube channel. On Tuesdays, we have the Hot Sheet Show, 3 p.m. Eastern every Tuesday, talking all about everything going on in the world of prospects and player development, college baseball, high school baseball, minors, and the majors. Thank you to Jeff. I'm JJ. So long, everybody. Hello, everybody. JJ Cooper, Jacob Brudner, another of the Baseball America prospect profiles. And today we are talking about Miami Marlins' number one prospect, left-hander Thomas White, one of the best pitching prospects in the game, part of a very deep now Marlins farm system. Jacob, when you kind of were diving in on Thomas White and kind of where he is now, it's already intriguing. But I think what really gets exciting when you talk about Thomas White is what he could be down the road.
Yeah, this is a guy who is not even his biggest fan, which I think is always exciting when it comes to prospects. He says himself that he has a really long way to go before he reaches his ceiling. This was kind of a weird year because he was so great, statistically speaking, and the stuff is what the stuff is, and there's a reason why we have him ranked as the number one prospect in the system and as highly as we do overall in the game. But he would tell you, and he told Baseball America, that his mechanics are not very refined. He thinks that he can throw cleaner strikes. And so to your point, there is a long way to go. You're talking about a left-handed pitcher with premium stuff and lots of untapped potential. He's a young former high school draftee. And again, you know, there's not a lot of guys who fit into his bucket as far as the stuff goes. It's an excellent fastball. He's got a really good slider and changeup. He's just a very intriguing prospect overall, especially as he makes refinements.
As you noted, he says himself he needs to make refinements. And there is evidence of that. This is a guy whose walk rate did climb 13.6% last year. At the same time, was kind of dominating, even if he was falling behind sometimes, because he has bat missing stuff. This is a guy, he reached AAA. Is there the possibility that some of these lessons are not really going to get the stuff so good that he might have to find some of these lessons, get taught them in the major leagues? Because until then, he might not really get punished as much for kind of what he's even perceiving as the slight flaws in his game.
Well, Edward Cabrera and Ryan Weathers are no longer Miami Marlins, and so it seems as though the organization has that intention. It does set up for Thomas White to be a big leaguer at the start or near the start of the 2026 season. The stuff is ready to go. Again, this is not somebody who has a lot of ground to make up as far as the stuff goes, as far as the makeup and the competitiveness go, which is really important. This is somebody who is close. He was dominant in 2025. And even if the walk rate climbed, he did still show the bat missing ability, which is excellent. He is still somebody who's going to go out and get a bunch of outs and look effective doing so. He doesn't need to be in the zone to win. And I think that the Marlins are ready to see that in the big leagues. Whether that's immediately in 2026 is kind of something that remains to be seen. But yeah, he's ready to rock. And I think that a lot of the development will have to come at the major league level, which is something that the Marlins need to now prove that they can do effectively.
That slider, that's kind of the weapon right now. Like, the fastball is really impressive. There are multiple secondaries here, but that slider is really going to be kind of the, if we see Thomas White dominate at times, you know, in flashes at the big league level in 26, that slider is going to be what he probably is really going to hang his hat on, I would imagine.
Absolutely. 50% miss rate, 31% chase rate in 2025 on that pitch alone. It is an outstanding offering. We currently have it as a 70 grade slider, which is about as good as you're going to get. Not a lot of 80 grades in the pitch department throughout the game right now. He has that as an absolutely premium pitch. There was not a single person who I spoke to throughout our prospect handbook process when we were getting evaluations and starting to understand how the industry views these players. There was not a single person who I spoke with that did not put a double plus grade on his slider. It is an outstanding pitch. It has proven results. It has worked in both double and triple A. And the expectation is that it continues to be premium when he reaches the game's highest level.
But even when you're talking about as much of a power lefty as a guy like Thomas White, he's going to face a lot of right-handed hitters. The question then becomes, okay, well, what about the changeup? And the good news for Thomas White is this is why he's one of the top pitching prospects in the game. This isn't like, oh, he's trying to add one. He's trying to learn one. Kind of describe his changeup, if you would, to us, Jacob.
Yeah, it's got a lot of fade and tumble, and it was particularly effective against right-handers, which I think is important to state. So he does have that equalizing offering when he can't go to the slider. He does have an extra pitch here. We put it at a 65, so it doesn't exactly lag too far behind that slider that he throws that we like so much. Again, it has movement in two different directions. It is an extremely effective pitch in the mid-80s. He's able to use it outside of the strike zone to get swings and misses, which is where it's most effective, but he does throw it for strikes at times. Kind of the same thing that he does with his slider. He's very, very good at using his pair of off-speed pitches to complement that fastball. I think the other thing that's really important to mention here, he said himself and has talked about this before, his changeup kind of helps him when he doesn't have his best command in certain outings. If the fastball isn't locating well, he is able to place this changeup to get swings and misses. And so in addition to the movement profile, I think that it pairs really nicely with his arsenal. And at times it pairs really nicely with the arsenal when it's not at its best.
So we've got him. And then the number two prospect, also a top 100 prospect, is another pitcher. Robbie Snelling, was there a debate here? When you talk about the quality of White stuff, I don't know if there was that much of a debate. But was there a debate at number one? And more than that, like, this does seem like that we now have these two guys who we can expect to see in that big league rotation in 2026.
Yeah, the expectation absolutely is that Robbie Snelling will be a major leaguer very early on in 2026, maybe even earlier than Thomas White. This is somebody who is older. He's got an arsenal of above average to plus pitches. He does throw better strikes more consistently than Thomas White, which I think is something the organization really values. When you ask, was it hard to, you know, decipher between number one and number two? The answer is kind of no. I think that Thomas White stood out very clearly as the top pitching prospect in this organization. And as you have said now multiple times, one of the top pitching prospects in the game. I don't know that Robbie Snelling really had the push into that territory, but he is a very exciting prospect in his own right. The biggest thing for Robbie Snelling from 2025 was the kind of the resurgence of his fastball. He had a major velocity dip in 2024 that saw his results trend in the wrong direction. All of a sudden, he regained some strength, some mechanical clarity, and he's back up into the mid-90s. The fastball plays, you know, even into the upper 90s and is getting swings and misses again. The rest of his arsenal has played off of that and was always kind of pretty good. But rediscovering that fastball was key for him, and now we just need to see it hold. And that's why he ended up at number two and doesn't exactly have that same cachet going into 2026 that Thomas White has.
There will very possibly be throwing in the big leagues to another prospect, top 100 prospect in the Marlins system, because Joe Mack, the catcher, is also expected to make a 2026 arrival. This is a system filled with guys who we can expect to see make big league debuts or kind of settle into the major leagues in 2026. And let me tell you, we could also go on for a long time about some of the arms at the lower levels, especially the Dominican Summer League rotation that the Marlins had last year was filled with very intriguing power arms. Some guys who just are monsters of men for teenagers. There's a lot kind of developing in this Marlins system. That is our prospect profile. I'm Marlins number one prospect, left-hander Thomas White. For more prospect profiles, please check out the Baseball America YouTube page. We are trying to put up one of these every day during spring training, so we'll have a prospect profile, the number one prospect for all 30 organizations. And please don't make sure that you check out the Hot Sheet show as well every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern. When we were prepping on Eli Willits a few years ago, it's like, okay, this is going to be one of the best draft prospects, one of the best shortstop prospects in the 2026 class. And then in his draft year, we had to kind of reassess because Eli Willits reclassified. And at the time it was like, okay, this guy's going to be an intriguing guy to watch. Kept getting better and better and ends up being the youngest number one pick in draft history, going back to 1965, the Nationals picked Eli Willits first overall. He is the subject of today's Baseball America prospect profiles. We look at the number one prospect in each and every organization in the major leagues. And Willits is kind of the next, the key member of the next wave. We've kind of seen the Nationals, not that they're jettisoning what they got in the last rebuild, the James Woods, the Dylan Cruises, the Josiah Grays. But they did trade Mackenzie Gore. They did start to admit it's probably going to be a little bit longer. That's why Paul Toboni is taking over a new regime, a new front office. And Jeff, how important should Eli Willits be to rebuild 2.0 in DC?
Probably, you know, fairly important. This was a number one overall pick. It's somebody who's, you know, an advanced switch hitter with, you know, I think an easy hit tool to project as plus or maybe even a little bit better. Step right into professional baseball. And, you know, as a 17-year-old, one of the youngest players, American board players and, you know, a full season level at the end of the year and ran really, really high contact rates, rarely expanded the zone. Showed a balance of aggression and patience that I think is very rare for any young player kind of under the age of 20, but particularly for a guy who's the same age as high school juniors going into their senior year at that point in time. I think Willits is a guy when you think about the fact that he's a switch hitting, high contact, somewhat, you know, projectable shortstop who's a pretty solid defender as well, above average to maybe plus if things all click the right way. I think you look at a player like this as, you know, a major sort of blue chip. Might take a few years for it all to sort of materialize, but there's pretty big upside here. I think the only question mark you really have with Willits is how much power he ends up developing. But everything else is above average to plus.
So I will say Willits, when he went 1-1, we kind of started highlighting the possibility that he could go first overall as early as I think it was like March or April. Like this was not a case of a team just saying, hey, we're just trying to save money here. However, it also is something where they were able to, by getting him to agree to an underslot deal, which was probably going to be the case with anyone that they took 1-1. But by doing so, they were able to get guys like Landon Harmon, Coy James, Miguel Cime Jr. Like there was a number of other guys who kind of become part of this package because they saved money that they could spend elsewhere. But you hit on it with Willits. I would say if there's a knock is a little strong because again, this guy's so young that there's a lot of kind of paths that this could develop. But Jeff, when I look at him, it's like, if you wanted to, I don't say want to have a knock, but if you had a concern here, I do feel like that there's a chance that if the power doesn't develop, you're talking about more of a solid player than a star. it feels like that power development is really going to be the key about how much impact Eli Willis makes down the road, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think for me, it's not necessarily about Willis developing into, you know, any sort of impressive home run hitter. This guy doesn't have to hit 20 home runs to be an all-star and above average player. You know, I think we saw that with a Jacob Wilson last year with the Athletics. And, you know, I do think Willits in some regards, you know, has a hit tool that probably ends up more polished maybe than even Wilson's, just based on some of the swing decisions and similar sort of contact ability, especially when you consider how young Willits was. But yeah, you know, does he get much bigger? I think you look at the engine, you look at his dad, who was a professional baseball player, did not hit many home runs. His brother is a college player and a draft prospect in 2026, not a guy that's known for hitting a lot of home runs. So you sort of just look at his family and just sort of the build, et cetera. All right. I don't think home runs is necessarily what we're looking for. I'm looking for hard liners and him being able to sort of make somebody pay in a mistake over the plate. This is a guy that could hit 12 home runs, but hit 300 every year with a high OBP, play, you know, great defense, steal a bunch of bases, hit at the top of a lineup, and score a ton of runs. That's really the type of profile that I'm looking for from an Eli Willis. So it's just a matter of getting to a little bit more power, that he's hitting line drives and, you know, hard hit ground balls and, you know, the occasional fly ball, you know, to the pull side. He's hitting that stuff hard. He's 17 years old. There's a lot of time for him to add that good weight, get stronger, and develop that part of his game. It's often an area where we see guys make big jumps in at any year, at any point between sort of 17 and 21, 22. So there's a lot of runway for Eli Willits to sort of develop that part of his game. But it is definitely the biggest question mark and sort of the lingering question that a lot of evaluators might have on Willits and just how much impact he's going to have in the bat.
You touched on the flip side of that, which is when it comes to his understanding of the game, when it comes to his ability to do those little things at shortstop that you want to see a player do, this is a guy who's grown up around the game. His dad was a big leaguer. He's got a family of baseball players. You see that when Eli Willits is on the field. If you're looking at timetable here, we don't know if CJ Abrams is going to stick around. We don't know if the Nationals are going to keep CJ Abrams or not, but let's say they do. This actually kind of syncs up reasonably well, potentially, as we just mentioned. Willits is so young, we would not expect, this is not a guy you're going to expect in 26 or even 27. You're probably looking at 28 or maybe, you know, the end of 28. But that kind of ties into how much longer CJ Abrams is under team control. So you do have the possibility that you could have a very good transition here where Abrams is your shortstop of the now and the near future, and then Willits is your shortstop of the more long term. Jeff, won't ask you to kind of hang on this too long, but defensively, when you look at the tools, this does feel to me like in all the reporting that we've done, it feels like that this we're talking about a guy who's a pretty likely shortstop, not a guy who's probably going to have to move off the position, I would think.
No, I think everybody you speak with, you know, really likes the hands, the actions, the internal clock. That's the stuff that I think is most important for a shortstop, honestly, because there's plenty of guys with tons of range that don't have that element, that sort of feel for the game. He has that. And, you know, maybe there's some questions about just like how big the arm is. I think he's got enough arm for shortstop. The release is really quick, moves well laterally, you know, right or left. Makes, you know, some off balance, difficult throws. That was something that we even saw in pro ball following the draft when he did debut. So yeah, I don't think there's a lot of questions that he's going to stick at shortstop. And, you know, if he has to move to second base or somewhere like that, he's going to have a valuable defensive position and he's going to contribute on that side. That's not an area of his game that I think a lot of people are going to have question marks about, but certainly has the tools to stick at short long-term.
The Nationals are in another rebuild, but they are kind of adding the ingredients to pull this rebuild off potentially. Hopefully a little better for them than the last one. Harlan Susanna, Alex Clemmy, Travis Sikora. We've got some arms who are coming down the road. And then when you got like the Eli Willits, we're going to see what a Harry Ford. They've gotten one trade. They then Gavin Fien, Devin Fitzgerald in other trades. So they're building something here. We'll see what's coming. But that is our prospect profile on Nationals' number one prospect, Eli Willits. For more of these, please do check out the Baseball America YouTube channel. We are rolling out one prospect profile for the number one prospect in each and every organization. And by the way, if you want to hear more about this, we also have over at the YouTube channel, Deep Dives, and on the podcast feed, Deep Dives, where we've taken an in-depth look at each and every organization as well. For Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.